didn't steal that implant.
Bribery, assault.
I said I didn't steal this implant. Logan did.
Go on.
Okay, geez, look. The day that I was fired, I saw Logan swipe one of the prototypes.
Logan?
Yeah. And I figured that he was swiping it for the competition. But I also figured, hey, if he was going to make a quick buck, then so was I.
You were going to blackmail him.
The email that I sent him was the warning. And then I was gonna go to his house and I was going to confront him. And then I made it as far as the walkway a few times, but I never worked up the nerve to knock.
So if Logan stole the implant to sell to the competition, how did it end up in his wife's arm?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy, aren't you?
Welcome to Killer Casting. I'm your host, Lisa Zambetti. I'm a casting director for film, TV, sometimes commercials, video games, all kinds of stuff. And I just love talking to people who know more about the entertainment industry than I do. And so if you've watched any amount of TV or streaming this past year, certainly if you watched the Super Bowl, then you probably have seen my guest today. Despite two entertainment industry-wide strikes we had last year, Tony Robinette booked four major shows in 2023, countless other projects, and in my eyes, he's probably one of the busiest actors in Hollywood that you've never heard of. And Tony, I'm going to ask him all these questions just to get his reaction, but he's probably been described in the past as a character actor. And I want to talk to him about that moniker. And I want to talk to Tony about his career, how he's managed to book so often and so consistently year after year after year. I was looking at his IMDb page. It's just amazing. I want to know the method to his madness. So please welcome actor Tony Robinette.
Hi, Lisa. Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. I want to correct you because I don't think I know more than you.
We'll see. You certainly know things, pockets of things that I don't know. So full disclosure, I actually reached out to Tony because I'm going to be teaching for a major university this spring. It's a 10-week course in business for actors for a place where you get the best actor training money can buy, really. And this is sort of like their business for actors course that I'm teaching. And while I do know a lot about my side of the business, there are some parts of the business that I don't know about or I've never really had to know about. So I wanted to pick Tony's brain about things that my students are asking Tony because I had them before they could take my class. I required that they fill out this like 20-question questionnaire just to kind of see where they're at because you really don't know, even though they've been going to a prestigious university for 4 years and they've probably taken the best acting classes, voice, speech, movement, period, drama, all kinds of things. It's not clear to me, now they're graduating seniors, what they know and what they know to expect about the Mount Everest that is going to reveal itself in front of them. Did you go to acting school, Tony? I don't even know anything about your background.
So you're going to love my background, hopefully. So I sort of did. Basically, I grew up in Orlando, Florida. I started off doing theme park stuff, like characters. When I was 16, it was my first job. I was running around in big furry costumes at theme parks. And then I got a job doing improv at a very prestigious Renaissance festival up in upstate New York, basically written and directed by the guy who came up with interactive theater. So I went there. Before that, right after high school, I did like a summer program at American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And I realized I was 18. I was there for more about getting rush tickets to Broadway shows. I could care less about school. Do you know what I mean? Then I was going to go to a theater school called Del Arte International School of Physical Theater.
Would you know that I know where that is?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was on my bucket list for years. And yes. I remember my mom literally having a conversation after I got accepted. And she was like, hey, they're saying the average student age is like 30, 32. Maybe this isn't a good time. And I agreed with her. So I just gigged it. I did a puppet theater company where we traveled around the U.S., like a 4-person tour kind of deal. And then I even joined Feld Entertainment, who operates Ringling Brothers. They operated Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus. They did Disney on Ice. They did Disney Live, which is what I was on. And I was like part of a 3-person comedy team for like 4 years. And then I went back to Orlando, got my equity card doing improv for Disney World, got into the world of non-union commercials and everything that Florida had to offer. Mm-hmm. And in 2012, I decided I'm going to make the plunge. My grandfather just left me some money. So I was like, I'm gonna take the plunge and I'm going to move to LA. And I've been here ever since. And I hit the ground running and I'm grateful for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love this place.
I just want to throw out some of the shows that you've been on because I didn't even mention that. So this is even before the amazing year you had last year. So you start off How I Met Your Mother, Masters of Sex, Brush Off the Boat. Oh, my God. Speechless. This Is Us. Good Trouble. All Rise. The Offer, which also starred my friend Patrick Gallo. And then Monster, which is the Jeffrey Dahmer story. But I just want to list what you booked just last year, as I said, during a year where there were two strikes going on. Tacoma, Waco, The Aftermath, NCIS, and Night Court. I mean, Tony, that is just an incredible year for an actor to have. And I'm going to talk about each of those. But I noticed that you posted, I don't know if it was like your New Year's post or something, and you were expressing gratitude for the year that you'd had. And you had, I booked 4 major shows, a couple of network shows, some streaming shows. And how many auditions did you actually go on that year?
Oh my goodness.
Because you posted the number, I believe.
There was one year, I believe it was 22 or 23, where I think, because I keep track of everything.
Yeah.
I think I had like 99 to 102 auditions and I booked 6 things.
Just say that again, because I have, for my students who are going to be listening and watching that, 99 to 100 auditions. And of course, that's across genre. I mean, that's not just for TV. That's probably for commercials, industrials, voiceovers, all kinds of things. I think what you posted as far as, I think you posted in like 70 something, 77 television auditions or something like that.
Yep.
And you booked 4. And that's a great year.
It's a great year. And that doesn't, I don't self-submit. That's only submissions through my reps, through my agents. So that is a fantastic year. That's a fan-freaking-tastic year. That is a rock star year. That's good. Usually, if I'm lucky, I walk away with 1 or 2 in a year, if the stars align and the universe is on my side.
But Tony, think about it. These students who are, any actor listening right now, whether you're new or you've been in the business for a while, you got, okay, let's say 70 odd no's and 4 yeses. How do you keep going in the face of all those no's? That's something that is so important for actors to try to. You got to pivot your point of view to survive that, right?
100%. I don't focus on getting the no. My job, in my opinion, my job as an actor is to audition. You know what I mean? And I can get to the whole cliche thing of it. There's a thing that's out there where it's like, it's a sign that says, congratulations, you are one of 30 actors who got chosen to be here for the audition. You have to think about that. That's really true. Mm-hmm. I mean, your inbox has probably blown up about 3,000 submissions for one role.
Well, yeah.
Reality is you're only going to see about 30 to 50, and that's even including digital tapes. It's because it's so time consuming. You're only going to see about 30 to 50 of those people. I'd imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, out of those 30 to 50, maybe 10 to 15 might be getting the call. And then out of that, you're going to pin maybe 3 to 5 at most for producers. Mm-hmm. So you don't focus on that. If you focus on that, you're more worried about booking, and we can't control booking. So like, I just worry about getting my best stuff out there. That's all I need to do. I need to get my best audition out there. And after I press send or after I leave the room, I try my best not to think about it. I can't change anything. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? Oh, I coughed at the wrong place. Lisa, can you delete my tape and have and take this one instead? No, you're not going to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
You just worry about you and don't worry about booking. Booking is the cherry on top.
Right. Right.
And we all want to book. We all do focus on it, and it's okay to focus on it. But at the same time, it's just the mindset of not caring about the actual outcome of the audition. You care about the audition, not the outcome of the audition.
I couldn't agree with you more. And as you were saying, I think that you're right on the money. I mean, look, so I'm doing a film right now, shooting in Nashville. We're casting some of the roles out of LA. Some of them we're going to try to find local. We want those great local Southeast area actors to get a shot at this. I mean, they pay the taxes in that town.
Well, I was going to say, production wants that tax credit. You might as well save some money and discover new talent.
What I mean is that they are the people who live there who are actually paying the taxes that allow the town to have that tax rebate, and their SAG-AFTRA members in that local town. So you really want to try to let them get a shot at stuff that's shooting in their local places. But yeah, so like for one of the lead roles, like girl 18 to 24 years old is the range for this lead role. We got 3,000 submissions for one role. And of those, I think we asked for, because it's a search. It's a little bit different than TV. You do have a longer time to search. So I think we accepted like 150 self-tapes. I watched every single one of those self-tapes. And we also did live pre-reads as well. And then we sent our director like our top 15 that we loved. And then he called back like 6.
Yeah.
And now we're down.
About right.
Yeah, yeah. And so now we're down. Now we pinned 3 of them. And now it kind of, those tapes are going to make the rounds to all the producers and everybody's going to argue and blah, 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 blah.
So now, can I ask you something? Because I'm always interested in knowing, and I would love to know your thoughts on this. Over the past few years, we've seen casting directors be villainized a lot in the industry. And I want to make it known, how many man hours was that for you to do that?
Oh, I couldn't even tell you. I mean, so much. And it's like, it's like a 24/7 job. It's not like it's...
And that doesn't mean you're being paid 24/7.
Oh, no. Not at all. Oh, God.
Yeah, your rate is your rate. And what I'm trying to educate people on, too, is that casting is not the villain. They're on your side. They want you to win. Yeah. They want you to make their job a little bit easier. They, like, everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to eat. Everybody wants just a seamless project.
Right.
Uh-oh.
And I have to tell you, I'm a real numbers kind of girl. I don't trade in anecdotes and stories. Like, I really want to know hard numbers. And in my experience, there is no statistical advantage for doing something live via Zoom for your pre-read than just sending your self-tape. I have seen zero advantage. And all of the live things that I did, I don't know how we saw maybe 20, 30 girls live for a pre-read that read with me via Zoom, maybe 2 we passed on to the producers as opposed to all the self-tapes that came in. And I'm completely objective. The work is the work. And if it wasn't there for me reading, I'm not going to pretend like it was there, even though it was me reading with you and me redirecting you. I'm not going to give that any more weight than a really great tape that came in.
I agree 100%. I'm one of those people, I miss being in a room, but I love the convenience of not being in the room. So I'm not going to complain. I'm going to do my job and I'm going to walk out.
Exactly.
And I think that's what everyone's looking for. Just do your job.
Absolutely. Now, should we talk about NCIS that you booked? I guess I should shout out that experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to talk about NCIS.
Okay, go ahead.
I auditioned for NCIS and it was a fantastic experience, but also I got in my head a little bit about it. So I auditioned for it. I got the call back. So I immediately called you. I'm like, who's the queen of procedurals that I should coach with or at least get some tips? So I called you. I sent you my tape. Our coaching was very brief, but it was very spot on. And it's exactly what I needed to hear. You talked to me about pacing. And then the audition, which is rare, happened live via Zoom. The callback was live via Zoom with Jason Kennedy as my reader. And I remember being upstairs in my office. It was right before dinner. It was like a 5:30 callback. I did it and you're going to laugh at this. I immediately got in my head because I saw more than 3 or 4 people in the room. And then I've been in this industry for a while. It still gets to me sometimes and I still have to put myself in check. So that got to me. I saw people I knew who I was always in the same room with. That sort of internally got to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Casting was like, hey, Tony, great seeing you. Do you have any questions? No questions. Great. I'm going to be your reader. You can focus on me. Ready when you are. Literally, now recording. I did my thing. Great, Tony. Thank you.
So there was redirection. No redirection.
No redirection. No great job. No sugarcoating. It was in, it was out. And I remember exiting the Zoom meeting and just going, and then I remember coming downstairs and starting dinner. And my partner was like, how did it go? And I was like, I think it went fine. And I just, and then I started immediately crying. I was like, what's wrong? I said, I know I did. I literally said, I know I did my job, but I just need to get this out. I need to get this out because it's going to help me move forward. I did my job. It just sucks that I got no redirect. It sucks that I got nothing back. Mm. And I even told him, I said, it's normal. But right now, this one hurts a little bit that I got nothing back. I didn't get this. And I'm like, and I just needed to let it. I said, I need it. I don't need you to tell me anything. I just need to let this out so I can continue on with my day. Yeah. You know what I mean? He listened to me and I cried a little bit. And as I was making dinner, like 25 minutes later, hey, you're pinned.
Right.
And then he was like, so all that was for nothing. I'm like, yes, all that was for nothing. I had a moment of weakness where I was like, I was needy. You know what I mean?
No, but it's such a human reaction. Of course it is, because there can be real poker faces in these callbacks, right? So what Tony is talking about is that he had a Zoom callback with my friend, Jason Kennedy, who cast for NCIS, who I did not say, hey, I coached Tony, or I didn't try to put my finger on the scale in any way at all. And so Tony probably zoomed in with Jason. And then there are other thumbnails of people in that session too. Sometimes you can see their faces. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes they hide non-video people who aren't on the video. So you really have no idea who else is watching you. And then after Tony's callback, they all talk about who they liked at the end of the session, and they go through. It's a real process. And even with Tony saying he's pinned, doesn't necessarily mean he's booked. So then you have to go through that waiting process. Like, when are they going to actually book me? Because those pins can suddenly disappear. The role could disappear. Anything can happen. I'm so glad that you got that. That's such a great show to get on. And it's one of those shows, because it's been on for so long, like it's like a rite of passage for people to be on those shows, for sure.
And it was an education. I'll tell you that right now. It was an education for me. The series leads and series regulars, we rehearsed, and I will tell you, it was phenomenal, because it felt like they did not know their lines at all. And then all of a sudden, when the cameras rolled, they were on it and they knew it. And it was just like, it was just a definition of how a well-oiled working machine works. We were done. This was a guest star. We were done with my scene by noon. My call time was like 7:30 in the morning. Like, just a well-oiled machine. You came in, you knew the expectations, you did your job. They said, thank you, pat you on the back, thanks for being a guest in our house, and you walked away. And that's how it should be.
Yes. So this goes to the point where you didn't get any redirection in your callback. In my experience, that's what we're looking for. We are looking for the answer that you don't have to redirect, because there's no time. Right. As you say, it's just clicking right along. The people who get a lot of attention and the time are going to be the series regulars. They're going to get the attention of the director. And we just need the guest cast, whether you are a co-star or a large guest star. You like you said, you wait in your trailer 7 in the morning, and then it's go time. Show up, go, walk through it, done. That's the way that those shows have to function. So if you're going to go up for one of those shows, you have to have your game face on. You have to know that actually not getting a redirection is a really good thing in a weird way, because you were in the pocket for sure.
And it's like the people on the set, I literally asked, oh, how long have you been with NCIS? Oh, this is I've been with them since day one. And you're like, you're on season 20. Wow. Next person. Yeah. How long have you been? I'm sort of new. What's new? 7 years.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like in, like you can't. Now, how many times had you gone in for Jason before, or Jason and his partner, Susan? Or
I think maybe 3 or 4 times in total in the 12 years I've been here. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I also want to tell people, please go follow Jason Kennedy Casting. It's his Instagram. Mm-hmm. And he is one of the most actor-friendly people. He does a lot for our acting community. Mm-hmm. During our strike, he was there practically every single day. He was making sure people were eating. I'm getting a little emotional about it, because you don't see that a lot nowadays. But he was literally like, hey, we need volunteers for this food outreach for actors. Please come. If you're hungry, please come. You don't need to explain yourself. Just visit us. You know what I mean? He really, really, really stepped up to the bat during our strike. So thank you, Jason.
He is one of the dearest people. I consider him a friend. And there are some things I can't really disclose right now, but let me just tell you, he has done so much for actors behind the scenes. I can't even tell you. He's one of the good ones. And sometimes when people, especially when people are shitting on casting directors, I just think, yeah. Oh my gosh, if you only knew how much we fight for you. Let me just pivot for 1 second. I'm going to get back to your other credits. But here's something that I did want to ask you about. How do you work with your representatives for kids who are just graduating? I think they are going to have to be self-submitting as much as possible. They may or may not get representation from their showcase that they're doing. And so how often do you, maybe not so much now, but were you just a self-submitting machine? Were you just trying to get in any work that you could possibly get? And where did you do that?
I think when I first moved to LA, yes, I was literally doing anything I could on Actors Access or casting networks. I was lucky enough that I got a pretty steady portfolio, if you want to call that, or a reel or whatever, before I moved to LA. So I sort of walked in and immediately got a commercial agent. And I was with Maverick for 6 years commercially.
How did you get that agent?
I actually sent, this was back in the day when it's like, I'm going to send manila envelope with my 8x10 and a cover letter. This was in, because I remember I moved in May 2012 and I had an interview with Maverick literally like on May 12th. And I remember Peter Novick at the time, who was the head of commercial for Maverick, he was like, how long have you been in LA? And I said, 3 days. I've literally been here 3 days. Wow. And so like 3 weeks before that, I sent out my packets and Maverick was one of the ones who got back to me. And then I got my first manager maybe a few months later, and then my first theatrical a few months after that.
Wow.
So I really didn't self-submit after I started getting rep, but I have really strong feelings on your rep. I think your representatives, your agent and or manager, is the most important business relationship that you have in this industry. I know a lot of people focus on casting and getting in front of casting, and I respect that, but I would also focus just as much, if not more energy, on getting a good agent and syncing up with them and living in harmony, because they get you in front of casting even more. You know what I mean?
Right.
So how does that
manifest itself in just your day-to-day life? Like how do you work with them? I mean, this is something that I don't know from that point of view, because I put out the breakdown, I get submissions from agents and managers, and that's that. I either pick and click or not. And sometimes they do an extra pitch, an extra push, but how do you on your side of it work with them?
So first of all, everything comes from a we mentality, not an I mentality. If a project is booked, it's yay, we booked the project. It's all about we, all about this is what we are doing. It's a team effort. My mindset is on the team. Now, when I get an audition, there's simple rules like you confirm immediately. Communication is key. I'm friendly with practically all my reps and we can have a conversation about the industry or not. I keep them up to date on what classes I'm taking, who I'm coaching with. I have a headshot session tomorrow, so they have a say in what they think I need, what we think we should have. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, they're looking at my headshot more than I'm looking at my headshot. So I put them as an equal partner in making decisions.
Right. And you have representation in several different states, I believe. So we have Atlanta, New York, New Mexico.
Chicago.
Okay.
And yeah.
So this is maybe a little tricky to talk about, but so how did you get those representatives and how do you work with them in addition to your LA representation?
So in my opinion, all of this was unobtainable before COVID. All of this was unobtainable before COVID because the expectations was you showed up in person for auditions, probably for everywhere except Atlanta. Atlanta has been doing self-tapes since, 2012, yeah, something like that. How it works for me is everyone stays in their own lane, and that's something I have to manage. So it's like my New York rep is only submitting me for New York, not LA. My LA rep is only LA, not New York, not New Mexico, not Chicago, only LA. And so everyone stays in their lane, and I manage that. I don't put that on my management team. I don't put that on anyone else except me, where it's like, nope, this is the boundary, and we're cool with it. Awesome. I also work as a local hire in a lot of these places, which means that I'm willing to financially put myself up, get myself there, maybe rent a car if I have to. I take on the burden of that financially, but I also have really amazing perks. Like my partner works for Hilton. So I can stay at any Hilton Umbrella Hotel.
Wow.
With a friends and family discount that most people don't have. Or I have friends. Like I can stay in New York with some friends. Or in Atlanta with some friends.
But you must balance, like, is this job going to be worth submitting to for that? So you make those assessments.
And that's communication with your rep. You know what I mean? Like I told my rep, and I would love to talk about this with you. I told all my reps, I'm like, I am not one of these actors who is going to say no to co-stars. Because co-stars is just billing. It's not about the role. I said, what I don't want to do is I don't want like man number one holding a pencil.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I don't want these small co-star roles with under fives. Make it worth my while. And sometimes I have to get seen for those. Like in Atlanta, none of the casting directors really know who I am. So it's better just to get seen for one of those projects.
Let's get real. One line co-star on Succession, you're going to fucking do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, come on. You know, yeah. So it's
100%.
It has to do with
And a lot of people don't know this, but Dahmer was a co-star. It was a very large co-star, but it was a co-star. It should have been a guest star. That's subjective. But I think it should have been, but it wasn't. It was a co-star. Damn Skippy, I did it.
Yeah.
Now, This Is Us was a co-star. Damn Skippy, I did it. And not only just to do the work, but when you do this, I now have a relationship with Telsey. And I got in with them and I showed up. You know what I mean? So I have a relationship with an amazing casting office. I have a relationship with my agent now, who is, we're all eating. We're all getting a piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's happy.
And also, especially when you're working on a monster, which is a Ryan Murphy joint. I mean, he's like a repertory theater. He likes to bring people back. He likes to reuse people. So that's a great strategy to have gone after that for sure.
Yep. 100%.
So I'm going to tell you something and let me know how you think about this. So about like a month or two ago, a lot of casting directors had a meeting with SAG-AFTRA. We were in a little meeting with them that we were not allowed to record. But
was this before the strike?
It was after. We had really wanted, right after the strike ended, we all wanted to get into a room with any SAG rep to go over what the differences were going to be now. And what
build the boundaries.
We wanted to just really talk through some things. And so this was kind of one of those unofficial meetings, right? And to be honest with you, and I felt very badly for this rep because they really kind of got pummeled with lots of questions and lots of reactions, but they were kind of slapping their hands about local hire, okay? Saying like, we don't want you to be saying this is a local hire when it's really like a code, wink, wink, for if an actor wants to fly themselves in and put themselves up, they could be considered. Okay. And I understand that they're trying to protect people like you so that, you know, instead of not. So when you're a local hire, that means that you are saying I live within 60 miles or 200 miles, whatever it is. You know, different regions have different rules. And I live in that area. I'm a local hire. So you don't have to house me. You don't have to pay for my plane ticket or my ground transport or my per diem, my meals or anything. I'm acting like I live here, right? And so the problem is that actors who are, they just want to work. And so they'll say, I'll be a local hire. I'll fly myself out. I'll put myself up. And SAG is like, no, we don't want our members doing that. So here's the problem. For example, I was casting something out of Arizona that I only put out in that region, Tony. I did not put it out in LA or any other region. I just put it out there and I went to like Arizona Actors Facebook group or whatever and I posted it there. And the submissions I got, and I had people self-tape and I said, tell me where you're based. Tell me if you can be a local hire. Everybody said they could be a local hire. And so then you go to book someone and it's like, oh, I live in Colorado, or, I'm actually in LA.
And see, I think that is the big problem on the actors. I will tell anyone, never lie. Always tell the truth.
Right.
I mean, if the slate says, tell me where you're based, I'm going to say, hey, I'm based out of Los Angeles. I can be a local hire in Phoenix, Arizona. Now, all of a sudden, that decision isn't on me anymore. Now it's based off of casting and or production to go further. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I will be the first person. And I also tell my reps, I'll never lie.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'll never lie about where I am. I also see value in the work more than monetarily. You know what I mean? Example, I got to work with, it's not even on my IMDb yet. I got to work on a project that was directed by Peter Burke in New Mexico. I would have never had that chance probably there's a possibility I wouldn't have had that same opportunity if I wasn't cast out of.
Right.
If I wasn't cast out of New Mexico. And the thing is, I did my job by saying, hey, I'm not local, but I'm willing to be there. You know what I mean? As long as they knew that, in my opinion, I put myself in the clear.
Right, right.
It's a mutual decision and I've consented. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I guess for me, because I just love rules. I love to know what the boundaries are. So in that situation, what legally, as a casting director, is my obligation? Like, you have disclosed to me that you are not here, but you're willing to work as a local hire. Now, and what am I supposed to do with that? Because I know what my budget is. And I know that the whole reason we even put this role out locally is because we don't have the budget to fly people in. And so I guess that's the issue I have with SAG. It's like, I'm not trying to get anything over anybody.
No.
I'm not trying to be like, wink, wink, this is a local hire role. You know what I mean?
And I mean, like, so to my advantage, when I get hired in other areas as well, in other markets, part of the reason I might even get hired is because I have the credits they're looking for, even though I'm not local. The unwritten rules to working as a local hire. Every agent is going to ask for more money. Just get over that. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean you're going to get it. As an actor, that doesn't mean you're going to get it. My agents always, I ask them to literally, I'm like, if you can get more money, get more money, but it's not a deal breaker. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, when you submit me, you're submitting me and I'm agreeing to it because you know my boundaries. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to be one of those people who says, oh, all of a sudden I can't show up because you're not paying my way.
Right.
You know what I mean? I signed up for it. And I think I signed up for it. And that's, I think, the consent. You know what I mean? That's the conversation you have with your reps too. You have to have clear boundaries. You know what I mean? Where it's like, hey, I don't want to come in for a small one-line co-star.
Right.
I'd like you to keep me on track with very large co-stars and above.
Right, 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 right. And they can
always, you know, yeah.
And when they submit to Tony, they could also be like, okay, we're submitting Tony, but he is over scale. So that at least casting gets a heads up. Like, it's not, I don't even know what scale is right now. What, $1,200 or something like that? I don't know, for the day for a co-star?
Yeah, it's like 1280, I think, or something, yeah, like, something or like that. 1280, something like that.
Because then I can look in my budget and go, okay, I can move $100, $200, oh, shift that over to at least, not that we can ask for quotes anymore. That's a whole other discussion. But at least you get something and you feel good about it.
Yeah, because I mean, if I even get a little bit over scale and my rental car is $300, that's my rental car. And the important thing is that they know is I'm going to show up without any excuses. I'm not going to leave production in a lurch. God, can you? I know it's happened. God, I can't imagine. I don't wish that on my worst enemy. You not showing up because you're not a local hire.
That's the risky thing, because now in Arizona, it's not that bad for this thing that I did, because you can jump in a car and get there at some point.
Same with New Mexico. You give me 12 hours and I can be there.
Yeah. But if it's like on the other coast and there's weather involved and I'm like, I cannot, and I don't want the actor to be in that position too, because as you could get your shoot date and they're like, okay, we just need to see you 2 days before. And then all of a sudden the shoot date pushes or the wardrobe does need you or something, and it can get really, it makes me uncomfortable to put an actor in that situation.
And that's when we as an actor, we have to realize that if it goes no further than an audition, it's okay. It's part of it. Like, there's so many reasons you didn't get moved on to the next step. And I guarantee you, in my opinion, 95% has nothing to do with you.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Because, we love him, but he's in LA and we're in New Mexico. Why are we going to bring him in when we have this guy? Let's say thank you, bye. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right. I want to talk about type for 1 second, because if anybody kind of looks at your materials online, if anybody looks at your headshot, I don't even know how you feel about branding. I'm so all over the place with that whole term branding, but I would say that you're the funny guy, right? In general, you're the jolly, funny guy, and you certainly have been in those shows. It's like the Tacoma FD where you pissed your pants literally in the episode. But then you make a pivot, and this is what I love as a casting director. This is why I love it so much, because I can then take an actor who's really known for that and then put them in something that is so vulnerable, like what you did in Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story. Do you want to talk about that kind of a pivot and what that means to you?
Sure. And I actually want to talk about Dahmer because I think this is interesting in knowing this. So Dahmer was a one-line audition. It was a one-line audition. It was a small co-star. And I remember getting it. And my partner was like, we watched the original scene of Dahmer, the courtroom scene, because it was online.
The real people in it.
Yeah. So we actually watched the victim impact
statement.
Mm-hmm. And my partner was like, you need to memorize that. You need to memorize. And I was like, yeah, I do. And I said, but it's only one line. He goes, no. You need to memorize that. It's Ryan Murphy, and he's known for doing this kind of stuff. And I was like, you know what? You're right. So I memorized the entire thing. I memorized his mannerisms. I got into the headspace. And literally the day before the shoot, you tell your client to be familiar with this. And it was literally word for word.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That is like next level. That's next level.
Literally word for word. And again, the expectation of legit 24 to 48 hours before my shoot. Here's a 1 minute monologue.
Wait, before your shoot, not before the audition. So you booked it for the shoot. Got it.
We booked it. And then I did the fitting. And then we had like 4 days between the fitting and the first day of shooting. And literally the day before, I think I got this. Hey, can you tell your client to be familiar with this? And it was legit the entire script as written. And if you've seen that clip from Dahmer, and then you go back and you watch the victim impact statement, it is everywhere. The man's not completing his sentences. He's really nervous. There's a lot of energy pivots where it's like, I'm going to go left. No, I'm going to go right. No, I'm going to go off center. Like, it's almost like a brain dump of like, I don't know what to say next. So it was a little tough.
Good morning, Honor. My name is Donald Bradoff. I'm for the Bradoff family. As much as love in our family closed, my mother gave 5 beautiful kids. We lost. He destroyed the baby of the family. And I hope you go to hell. I love this world. You guys did a wonderful job. Bottom of my heart, thank to God, I got a lot of strength. Thank you all. God bless America.
And the way we shot that was just incredible because we shot it, and I'll never forget 2 things about that shoot. We shot it in a way where we shot it like a play. So it was 1 continuous shot, victim statement after victim statement after victim statement. And so it was probably like a 6 to 10 minute scene. We did that. I remember people crying and people applauding. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then they kept me for coverage and 1 other person. And again, actor brain is like, oh my gosh, what am I doing wrong? You know what I mean? Yeah, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I think they just wanted to highlight that victim impact statement.
Yeah.
Which they didn't cut anything out of my monologue. They let me do the entire monologue. And then I think 1 thing that I will take to this day for my entire career is we were walking back to holding and Richard Jenkins stopped me and said, hey man, great work.
Oh my God. I would have just died. Oh, forget it.
Richard freaking Jenkins said, hey man, great work.
Unbelievable. That's amazing. Oh, I love him.
Multiple Oscar nominee, multiple Emmy winner nominee told me, hey man, great work.
Yeah. For a 1-line co-star, which I'm very glad you didn't go, oh, I don't do co-stars anymore. Or that used to happen sometimes. Yep. And it's so short-sighted sometimes. You know what I mean? Oh my God. Okay. Let's pivot from that because I don't want to talk your ear off all day.
Yeah.
Let's pivot to Dunkin' Donuts.
That's it. Yeah.
Oh my God. When I saw, I don't even watch football, but I was watching the Super Bowl and you came out rocking that pink and orange leisure suit with freaking Ben Affleck. And yeah.
Came to my work. Now I got to show her what I can do.
He's here.
Affleck on the track.
What up, Bronx? Are you considering
Operation! Here comes the Boston Massacre! The Dunkies! Touchdown, Tony on the keys!
Player, coach.
Got it.
I'm open.
And needs no introduction, my partner!
Sometimes it's really hard to be your friend.
You said you were gonna support me.
Dunkies!
Don't go away. My heart. Why you dunking me, girl? Why you dunking me?
Dunkies!
My heart.
How do you like them donuts? I'm so sorry.
You had to see it, but I forgive you. Lay us on the track.
Are we going to be on the album?
We talked about this.
I mean, tell us the story of that campaign, which you must have had to keep under your hat, so to speak.
Yes, we did. We were told nothing, by the way. We just knew what it was for. I had an audition for Duncan. It was for role A. It was like a sound engineer. There was no script. Mm-hmm. There was no script. It was a self-tape. I did it. And it was literally like me looking at the camera. It was like annoyed sound engineer. I was like, hey, you could put some sweetener on it and we can make it sound perfect. I got you. That's all I literally did. Sent it out, heard nothing. And then all of a sudden it was like ring, ring. Hey, you have an in-person callback in 2.5 hours.
Oh,
like literally, I think I got a 2.5 to 3 hour notification. And again, a lot of people are going to say no. A lot of people will say no.
And this is an in-person, unlike other things, commercials do a lot more in-person than they used to.
Yes. My fabulous agent actually said in an email to all of her clients, she was like, guys, just so you know, right now, commercials are back in some way, shape, or form in-person. Whether it's the callback, the initial, whatever, some sort of in-person aspect in it. For LA. I want to be very clear, for LA. So I went, and when I get there, there was confusion. They were like, oh, are you here for this role? And somebody was like, no, he's here for the other role. Okay. He's here for one of the dancers. And he goes, no, there's only 3 guys who are here for the dancers. He's one of the dancers. I was like, okay, great. They were running behind like 45 minutes. And when I went in there, I went in after one of the other dancers who ended up booking it. And they put on, stuff. They put some blocks. And so they literally said, just dance, be a boy band member. And I did it. And I was, luckily I knew the song because I'm a child of the 80s and 90s. Well, I did the song. And then I remember it was done. And then me and my partner went to San Diego for holiday break. And I believe like December or 26th or something, right? The day after Christmas. Hey, Tony, you booked it. I was like, great. Shoots in January. Great. So we shoot it. This is where things get weird. I go to the initial fitting, and the fitting is at somebody's house. Huge red flag.
Yeah.
And I even remember messaging I called my agent and I was like, hey, I'm fine with it because I know I'm not the only one there. And I know there's going to be a team there, but this is at somebody's house. And she was like, what? And then she proceeded to tell me, she's like, this is so weird. This casting has gotten so weird, but I think it's a celebrity spot because she managed to find out who the production company was.
Did you know it was even Dunkin' Donuts at this point?
We knew it was Dunkin'.
Okay.
We knew it was Dunkin' from the very get-go.
Okay.
So I go there, I get fitted for the jumpsuits, and then I sort of got wind by other people in production that Ben Affleck may be involved. And so I was like, cool. I'm not going to say anything until I know, nor do I care, because it's hearsay until I see it.
Right.
Then literally it's like,
did you sign an NDA at this point?
Yes. Yes. So we had a rehearsal. No, at this point, no, I did not sign an NDA.
Okay.
At this point we were scheduled a rehearsal, a dance rehearsal. And I was like, great, dance rehearsal. The dance rehearsal was at the director's house, and that's where all the NDAs came in.
Okay.
So we did the dance rehearsal at the director's house, and then we went to go see where it was being shot, and the director was Ben Affleck.
Oh, so he directed it too?
He directed it.
Wait, so it was at, wait.
Yep.
It was at his, you went to his house?
We went to his house for rehearsals.
His house that he has with J-Lo?
Yes, his house, and we went into his garage, which he has like a man cave with a basketball court and everything. That's where we had rehearsals. And actually, I want to tell you the most amazing part of this is it taught me how to produce more than anything. I mean, if you think about it, Ben Affleck used his home for rehearsals. He paid himself first. And then we were at Westlake Studios to film, which I believe is J-Lo's recording studio.
Oh, really?
So they paid themselves. Uh-huh. He used all of his friends. I mean, Tom Brady, a Boston boy. They used Matt Damon, who was incredibly, everybody was incredibly nice. Matt Damon, Fat Joe, J-Lo. J-Lo used her crew from New York. She flew him in. There was only about five actors, and everybody else was their friends.
I just can't believe what close access you got to all of those people like that. I mean, that's just blows my mind.
And the clients freaking loved us. The clients loved us. They took pictures of all of us. And then at the end of the day, they were like, hey, we can't give you the suits, but we can give you the custom-made Nikes that you wore. So we got the custom-made Nikes, Dunkin' Donuts Nikes that were hand-painted.
You can't even see those in the shot, can you?
No, we got to keep them. And literally everyone on set was like, I want to buy them from you. I was like, nope. Nope.
Oh,
nope.
My God. You could auction that stuff off. So yeah. Anyway. Oh, my goodness. So
what a great experience. Yeah. Like the Super Bowl commercial. So obviously it's probably not going to air that much. You know what I mean? I started getting residuals for it. It's probably going to lay a really amazing foundation for my year, which is great.
Yeah.
I can happily tell you at this point in time, I have completed my threshold for getting insurance for 2025.
I love that. That was something I was going to ask you about 2023 is, even though you did book four things and you said one of them was a guest star, top of show guest star. I'm not even sure if it was one day or top of show. But I mean, when was the last time you were able to meet that threshold?
That last time I was able to meet that threshold, I believe, was in 2014 when I booked an Affleck commercial and a Wendy's commercial in the same year.
Oh, so just so you guys understand, like, to meet the threshold to get health insurance in SAG-AFTRA is about $26,000. So yes. Even as much as Tony has been working, as successful, and your residuals go towards that, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
So even
NCIS helped a lot.
Yeah. Even though he's worked so much, just getting to that threshold can be definitely challenging. But I've definitely seen that commercial more than just on the Super Bowl. I mean, I've seen it online and I've seen, it looks like it might, I mean, you probably can't even tell us. It might be a campaign that lasts a little bit longer. We'll probably see. Yeah.
And then I have some other, I have two more commercials. So right now I have, as we speak to this date, I have two commercials running right now. One is for the Georgia Lottery. And that was one of those situations where I was cast outside of LA and they flew us. Mm. And I got per diem. I got the travel rates. I got hotel, all that fun stuff. I was not a local hire for that.
So let me just explain to people. Sometimes everybody will be traveled because it's a location where there maybe isn't a lot of local actors anyway, or for whatever reason, the production is already baked into the budget. Yeah, we're going to travel. All these roles are going to come out of wherever they come out of, which is awesome. Yeah.
And I want to also give props because I feel like representation matters. So Dunkin' Donuts was cast by Broadcast here in LA, and my Georgia Lottery was cast by Daniel Eskenazi.
She's major name in the cast.
Both are very actor friendly too. And then I have an FDA anti-vaping, Federal Drug Administration anti-vaping ad coming up, which I voiceovered. And that, I'm trying to think. I forgot who the casting was. I'd have to look up my records. And then I also have a major phone carrier commercial coming up, which was Petite Stink.
Oh my gosh. So the big lesson to my students because in the questionnaire, some of them indicated, I just want to be a film actress. Oh, I just want to be a theater actor. And I'm like, no, my loves, you need to be able to pivot to everything. Everything will feed you. There's nothing
wrong. The check cash is you're going to all of a sudden want to be a commercial actor.
Right. That commercial is going to allow you, if you do want to do a prestige show where you are still a co-star or whatever, that's going to allow you the freedom to do that, to be able to take that gig.
Not only that, but I remember before Dunkin', I had just read for Ben and Matt's one of their new shows that was ordered. And literally, I just read for it like a week and a half beforehand. Whether there's any correlation, whether there was any correlation, I had read for, I'll say it, because I didn't sign anything, Quincy. They're redoing Quincy. So I read for Quincy and it was being produced by Matt and Ben.
Look, I really believe in the subconscious of this industry where, yes, those were totally different casting directors that mm-hmm. did the Duncan commercial and those projects. But the fact that your face may have seen you before, whether he remembers seeing you or not, right. It's an accumulated effect. I really, really believe in this. And that's something about you, because as you say, you came in for something completely different in the Duncan yep. ad, and then all of a sudden you're the backup dancer. How does that happen if there isn't some sort of something subconscious that was laid in there that he then, you know, brought forth? So I really believe in that.
I believe in it too. So hopefully they saw me and was like, oh, he's not a good candidate for this, but maybe for this.
You just never know. So that's...
And again, the subconscious, who cares if they even remembered me? There was something that might have triggered, hey, he looks familiar, let's bring him in.
Yeah, exactly.
Or call back, or get the call back.
Oh my God, Tony, what a story. That is a great way to end this episode. What a triumph you have. But it's like, you worked it, you deserve it, because you have just been grinding, grinding, grinding. And that's like the biggest takeaway to people who want to have some kind of life in this business. You have to be able to pivot and be ready, just like your wonderful partner told you to be ready with that Dahmer monologue. I mean, you have to do the work and then be so ready for those opportunities when those doors open. And you're just such a great example of somebody who just works so, so hard. I can even tell when I coached you, it was already there. You had already done all the work, you know?
I actually remember you going, I don't know what else to tell you. You're like, you literally said, I don't know what else to tell you, because what you did is obviously what they wanted to see and they're bringing you in. So I'm going to tell you, and I remember you going, so I'm going to tell you the expectations of the procedural world. This is the expectations of the flow of this specific scene. And this is where you need to ramp it up and where you need to let it down. And you told me the technical aspect of everything.
Right.
And like, okay, and almost like the outline of, because here's the thing too, with these shows, the outlines never change. There's always the ramp up at this area. There's always the ramp down at this area. There's always the twist at here, but you don't know what the twist is, but there's always the twist that's coming. Like,
yeah. And that's what the audience would love. It's
a formula that works and they're not going to F with it.
Yeah. Or if they are, you will know it. Like, you will definitely, it will be written in there.
Yeah.
Tony, what else do you have to tell us? I know that you're a coach. So where can people find you on your social media, but also as a coach? Because I bet you are a tremendous, tremendous coach.
Oh, thank you. I do coach. You can find me at workingactorscoach.com. workingactorscoach.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at the Tony Robinette. Robinette.
Oh, yes. So good to see you. And I know we're going to see you as well. A lot more of you, I know, in the future. But for now, this is Killer Casting signing off.